The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
The interns are presented with a boatload of patience. Sydney growls at Bailey, and Meredith takes a dive. We'll talk the talk on all that and more in today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast, hosted by ABC.com. This week was part one of the epic three-parter that the writers of Grey's have lovingly dubbed their Super Bowl episode. And, well, as Shonda Rhimes often says, stuff happened. Speaking of, Shonda and fellow executive producer Betsy Beers are back today to discuss Walk on Water, which Shonda wrote as well. They'll also tease next week's episode, part two, entitled Drowning on Dry Land. Right now, things don't look good for Meredith, but we'll see. Maybe the ladies will give us some insight. Drowning on Dry Land airs next Thursday, February 15th, from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC, and will be available the next day at ABC.com.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Shonda Rhimes.
I'm Betsy Beers, and we're Grey's Anatomy. And happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while, actually.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming back and listening to the podcast where we ramble incessantly about strange things. Also, before we start, we wanted to say hi to one of our favorite other podcast human beings, Tim Gunn, who we just
revere.
We actually love. And I have to be honest and say I saw him at one of the events recently, and I was too nervous to go up to him. Because,
yeah, you really can't talk to Tim Gunn.
Because, first of all,
he's amazing.
And then
I look terrible with your clothes.
Just my hair was probably clumpy and...
Yeah.
It probably wasn't a very good dress, so...
It's too stressful, really, to talk to Tim Gunn, worrying about how he's feeling about the clothes that you're wearing.
It's true, but he's so awesome and totally magnificent.
He has amazing podcasts.
He does.
I have to say, they are the best podcasts ever. I have listened to them more than once.
You do, actually. You've come in on several occasions and said, I've listened to this podcast 4 or 5 times when we're behind on an issue. So we just wanted to say hi to Tim Gunn if you're listening. We're big fans over here, and I have to say, everybody at Grey's Anatomy is a big fan of yours. We do discuss it quite a bit.
Yes.
So I think there you go.
Discuss it, yeah. I think there's a little bit of an obsession.
I think there's a little, it's probably more closer to gentle stalking.
New writers on the show have been harangued and abused because they have not watched Project Runway.
Actually, it's kind of a requirement for assistants, too. We make them watch Project Runway, and they have to get on board.
Nobody has to be made to watch Project Runway.
No, that would probably imply the wrong
thing. We want to be clear
that
we don't abuse human beings.
No, nor do we force creative approach.
Exactly.
We really
are just suggesting that like-minded people like Project Runway.
Project, and also only smart, really intelligent, cool people like Project Runway, and you're probably a loser and kind of maybe don't even shower or something. So
if you're listening to our podcast and you don't like Project Runway, that doesn't make you a loser
or
someone who doesn't shower.
Because if you're listening to our podcast, then you're in good shape right there. So it's a different kind of category.
And Shonda,
you can hit me if you want. That might work.
Betsy and Shonda dig themselves into a hole they can't get out.
Wait, I'm going to get the spade and throw the dirt on. But really what we're here to do is discuss one of the most amazing episodes, which clearly is not over yet. I don't think the drama's over here with this one. Which
Walk on Water.
Walk on Water. This episode, we're here to talk about Walk on Water, which is, as we said, I think, probably a storyline which isn't over and is one of the most, it's very, very different for us for a lot of different reasons, right?
It is. It's different for us for a lot of different reasons. One, it's, I think the first episode that we've ever done that it's really half of an episode. I mean, it really feels like a part one.
Yeah.
Which is important. Two, it's the only episode we've ever done in which at the end of the episode, Meredith Grey goes into the water and the little girl walks away.
True.
Which I was really excited about, just doing something that was very different for our show and been in kind of a dark place lately. And I do have a thing for ferry boats, and it was kind of painful for me to make a ferry boat accident. But I felt like if you were talking about Seattle and trying to think of sort of the worst thing that could happen to such a wonderful city, it had to be, you know, a ferry boat accident.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things, obviously, that was difficult about that is ferry boats are probably the safest form of transportation.
They're the safest form of transportation.
They're
pretty impressed that the city of Seattle let us do this.
To help with us out.
Yeah,
and they were amazing about it. And that they participated and were really, really gracious about it. And that, you know, it was actually very, very difficult to come up with a realistic situation, which you could hurt a fairy dog because
and, you know, I've read
so
very, like, you go through and you do some research, and of course for us it's always important to find, you know, there is an example of a ferry boat accident. I think there was one in Japan that happened maybe 10 years ago that felt similar in terms of scope.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there have been very few because ferries are so safe.
So,
but there was something about the metaphor of, you know, we know that Derek has a thing for ferry boats. We've sort of seen the ferry boat thing happen. There was something about the ferry boat having the ferry boat accident and being crashed into that made sense to me for where Meredith and Derek are going and what's happening in terms of Meredith's emotional state.
Absolutely.
That felt really important.
Also, what I thought was really interesting was where we left Meredith the episode before in terms of relationship with her mom and what her mom did
crashed
with her
and burn, yeah.
toxicity. I mean, since that episode had so much to do with being toxic, you know, how Meredith's mom, even in their huge confrontation, really kind of damaged the relationship between Meredith and Derek in a way that only a parent in those situations could. And
only that kind of parent could. I mean, what I love about the last episode is that I think Ellis Gray is kind of wonderful. And
totally agree.
I actually feel like you understand where she's coming from her perspective. She has no time. She has no idea how much time she's going to be lucid, only a few moments to impart to her daughter all the things that she thinks are important. And she goes about it absolutely the wrong way, but she goes about it the way Ellis Gray would. And what's heartbreaking is that by the time we understand where she's coming from, she's already gone for Meredith. So Meredith's sort of been rammed into a container ship and left abandoned, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the connection between those two things, I think, is incredible. And also one of the things that I do really, really love about this episode is that, much like the accident itself, the accident comes out of nowhere. You start this episode, and it's very funny. Mm-hmm. It's very much, everybody's totally focused on themselves. Richard has dyed his hair, which is one of my singularly favorite things in the history of Grey's Anatomy.
Richard's that was also really important to me, this
hair.
Idea that in the midst of all the stuff, they're all in their mundane little world.
Totally.
And Richard, you know, dyeing his hair for the ladies, which is just so sad.
Which is so sad. And Christina having this push-me-pull-you in her brain about how to tell Meredith this huge piece of information, which is totally self-absorbed, too.
And also just the self-absorption of sort of, maybe I'll drown myself in the bathtub this morning.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Which, you know, she's not really going to do, but we've all sort of been in that terrible, terrible mood. And is he eating the tub of butter? Like, there's something wonderful about that level of my life sucks, and then there's just a much bigger picture there, which I think is very interesting.
Which actually, strangely enough, connects with last year's Super Bowl episode, the first episode where Meredith wakes up and she says, "It's, you know, I'm scared to get out of bed."
Yeah.
It's the opposite in this really weird way, is everybody's dealing with their mundane in this kind of, I'm just going to eat a tub of butter. I'm just going to lay down in the bathtub, which is why what happens comes out of nowhere so beautifully in the episode, you know, and works incredibly well.
All the little things in their lives are so important to them. And then you have this real actual event that sort of puts things in perspective.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And look, I think as we lead into the episode too, you look at with Izzy, who has been on the sidelines for so long.
Who has been sort of surgically lost. You know, she's really been surgically lost and sort of has disappeared in our eyes from being in the OR and having that world. You have Alex, who's been sort of subjected to getting coffee from Mark Sloan most of the season and sort of watching him get his hands dirty and really get in there and get involved.
That's such a great thing to watch, actually, is that first moment also when he finds her.
Yeah.
And it's this, I mean, she's been left for dead. In essence, everybody thinks she's dead.
Yeah.
And that he gets in, and this connection, obviously, I love that shot of her hand.
Yeah.
And the chief makes him leave because Christina's going to take over. And there's this, I think it's a great moment for Alex, but it's also just this great connection that he has in that moment with his patient.
Yeah, watching him connect with his patient, which is fantastic, because it's something that we haven't seen Alex really do.
Absolutely.
And in a weird way, the reason he can do it is because she, you know, her face is crushed. She looks a little bit like a monster. She's, you know what I mean? She's
absolutely
in the worst possible shape in the world, which is pretty much the only way Alex is ever going to reach across that divide and connect with somebody, which I think is really interesting.
Absolutely. Now, as you guys probably know, Shonda wrote the episode, so we actually have the first. That was Shonda coughing, by the way. That wasn't
me. I have a little, yeah, you know.
She's got a little cough.
I got a little cough.
Which is, it's working for you. You look great.
I think so. I think it also makes my voice sound sexy.
It does. It's sort of like you're kind of like
Lauren Bacall.
It's very Lauren Bacall, kind of scratchy. Which is good. Yeah. How did this? I mean, I sort of know the answer to this, but talk a little bit about how the episode came about in your brain, like where this came from, because you actually had this idea a while ago. I mean, you've been thinking about this for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I have been thinking about this for a while. I've been thinking about this since somewhere near the beginning of the season. There were sort of two overwhelming things, one of which I don't think I can actually talk about.
Yeah.
But the other one I can, which is that I felt like crashing a ferry boat was the most catastrophic thing that could happen. And that level of catastrophe, and to see the kids in the field was really interesting. It all started with the idea of doing a disaster drill and then having a real disaster. And when it came right down to it, playing a disaster drill wasn't really that funny because here's a little tip. If you have people who are supposed to be acting like patients and then you have real patients come in, but the whole thing's on television, so they're all played by actors, it becomes really hard to understand.
It was kind of confusing.
The difference between the drill and the real. It just became confusing for all of us.
And strangely, it ends up paying less respect to the actual disaster.
It was also like a weird space-time continuum because you have actors playing actors, playing injured people versus actors who were playing injured. It was very confusing for my brain.
Which was good, and so therefore I think it was lucky that
we just started talking about triage tests and went much simpler. It also allowed us to get to the disaster faster.
That's nice, Callie O'Malley.
I know, Callie O'Malley.
That's great.
But also there was something about where we're going with this. I want to be clear to all of those who watch the show. When you saw Meredith go into the water at the end of the episode, we don't like to fool around here on Grey's Anatomy.
No, we don't. We joke on the podcast, but we're dead serious.
We don't like to fool around. We don't do fake stuff. Like, Meredith ain't going to come crawling out of the water 2.5 seconds after the show starts next week. That's all I'm saying to you.
Do you like spitting fish?
Yeah. Spitting fish.
Wouldn't that be great? It's like, that's what I was expecting. It's just going to be a little goldfish pops out of her mouth. Exactly.
Yeah. That's not happening.
It's not happening.
That's not happening.
For what I know, I can guarantee you that's not
happening.
You know
what? Let's call that a teaser. Because... that's how we tease here.
That's absolutely is. You know what else I love is... I love the little girl.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other thing that was really important to me was the little girl who from the beginning, from the first read-through, from the first time I wrote the script, to me is a metaphor for Meredith Grey. I mean, in the description I said she should look a little bit like Meredith might have looked as a little girl. There's something about this little girl who's lost her mommy, who sort of can't speak and is clinging to Meredith that's interesting. And the fact that Meredith feels protective of her and is sort of taking her around with her is indicative of who Meredith is. And there's just to me a connection there that's very interesting. I also think that there are moments in this episode where it's not clear if the girl is real or not.
There's
the moment where she's standing
really
there and the people are going by and then she's just gone, which is important. And I'm not necessarily saying that the girl doesn't exist, but there is something to this aspect of disappearing acts and
you're there one day,
you're there one minute, and you're gone the next. That's very interesting. There's also, if you watch really carefully, when she first meets the little girl and she looks up and she sees the little girl, if you're really looking, and Ed and I put this in, we're kind of proud of this, if you're really looking in the background, Ed, the editor.
Ed Ornelas, he's the editor. He'd edit it. Ed.
Ed.
I like to call him Ted, which really irritates him.
I call him Super Bowl Ed.
Yeah. I don't think that irritates him. I think probably has that on his business card.
Exactly. But Ed, if you watch in the background, there's a shot of Meredith looking up and she's noticing the little girl. And if you freeze frame on your digital video recording device of whatever kind you have, you will notice that Meredith looks up and sees the little girl. And in the background, Meredith looks up and sees the little girl. So there are two Merediths in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
But
there was something very
classics.
Interesting about the idea of there being two Merediths in that moment when she looks up and sees the little girl and the whole thing. But I think there's something fascinating about that, and where that story is going is also very interesting to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing which is great, which I think is a continuing thing that we're having a really fun time with here, is the race for chief.
Yes.
And the race for chief resident, as it turns out.
Which I thought was really going to turn out to be something very interesting for us. The idea that there is a chief resident, race going on sort of at the same time as the race for chief. Chief resident, sort of the the pinnacle of being a resident. It's sort of the
boss
best.
Of all the residents.
You're the boss of all bosses, which you always assume Bailey is the boss of all bosses, but really she's on the same status as Sydney and Callie, and she's fighting for her own survival in there. And next season, we're going to sort of see how that plays out, the idea that there's going to be a chief resident. We're going to sort of see what happens when somebody moves up and is taking charge of everybody in that sense. And the race for chief, which has been a lot of fun to deal with and to watch, you know, our Derek and Burke and Mark and Addison struggle for top dog status has been really fun. And we're going to continue to see that too.
So I think that's going to be fun to watch. And I suspect that chief resident thing isn't going to go away next week either. Because it's great to have Sydney. Because
Sydney is one of our, we love Sydney.
Sydney's just really funny and great. And also
she's great. She's great to bring in. And yeah. And my favorite line of hers is, I'm a competitor.
Grrr.
Like she's just fantastic.
And Bailey says, I bite. Huff. Which I think is really funny.
Yeah. It's fantastic to watch them bring. And it's also interesting to watch how Bailey and Callie react to Sydney versus how Izzy and the interns react to Sydney. Like, to discover that they don't really like her either is interesting.
And nobody really does. But what we saw in the last time, or one of the last times we brought Sydney back, is Sydney's got more metal than you originally think.
And she's much more three-dimensional than people give her credit for.
Yeah.
And what I love about the way she's played is that she's played with such... Kelly, who plays her, is so serious about it. Like, Sydney is not a joke. Sydney is terribly, terribly earnest and means well at all times, which is very interesting.
Exactly. So I'm really, really looking forward to next week, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully you guys watching next week, because next week's really good.
Here's the thing. If you don't watch next week, you're going to be really, really upset.
Yeah, because really upset.
If only for when your friends tell you later what happened.
Yeah, because it's big, and there a lot of stuff happens. So you kind of have to watch the whole thing. Like,
sometimes a lot of stuff happens.
I remember once we said, you know, if you don't do anything, just watch the last. That's not true with this episode.
No.
Like you.
That was in Mark Sloan.
That was Mark Sloan. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, by the way, I'm totally endorsing.
Yeah.
I have no issue with that.
Fully endorsing the last.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Tal. You know,
yes.
That absolutely, but. I think the honest truth is this whole episode is really, we really want you to watch it.
And a lot of the questions that are raised in the first episode are answered in the second, but also just the second episode, we try to do is do three very different, because there are three connected episodes, but three very different hours of television. So that they have three separate they feel like three separate episodes. They have
three different paces,
three different personalities. And I think the second episode might be my favorite simply because of how surprising it can be. And once again, I'd like to point out that Meredith's not going to climb out of the ocean and spit a goldfish out of her mouth.
No, even a guppy. Not even a guppy.
Mm-mm.
Okay, no guppies on this show.
Mm-mm. And she wasn't wearing a life jacket.
All right, well, listen, we're going to talk to you. We're going to talk next week. So thanks so much for tuning in.
Love, Shonda.
Betsy.
Grey's
Anatomy.
That's it for now. Join us next time for more insights from Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers. And if you can't hold your breath until next week, you can tread water by rewatching last night's episode at abc.com. Drowning on Dry Land airs next Thursday, February 15th from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attblueroom.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athlete's worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world, delivered.